from Pacifica. This is Democracy Now!
President Trump has approved a major disaster declaration for the state of California to assist in the response to wildfires that are impacting across the state.
17 people dead, whole neighborhoods destroyed, 20,000 people forced to evacuate their homes in California. We'll talk to a Columbia University climate scientist whose work shows global warming is responsible for nearly half the forest area burned in the western United States over the past three decades. Then, 3 weeks after it was devastated by Hurricane Maria, President Trump allows a 10-day waiver of the Jones Act to lapse, restricting shipments of food, fuel, and medicine from foreign flagged ships as nearly half of the island still lacks clean water and almost 90% still lack electricity. We'll get an update from Reverend Jesse Jackson, who's gathered aid and headed to the island this week. And we'll speak with the Reverend about how Vice President Pence flew to Indianapolis to stage a walkout of an NFL game between the San Francisco 49ers and Indianapolis Colts after players on both teams held a protest against racial injustice during the national anthem. Pence tweeted he was there but used an old photo, and the incident is being condemned as an expensive stunt.
With the information I have, him tweeting a three-year-old photo, until he can prove that he's been an avid Colts fan and he comes to NFL games on a regular basis, this is a PR play.
Then President Trump says he will not restore the DACA program protecting hundreds of thousands of young undocumented immigrants from deportation unless lawmakers agree to expand the wall on the U.S.-Mexico border and move to keep out thousands of children fleeing gang violence in Central America. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In California, the death toll from the massive wildfires has risen to 17, with hundreds more hospitalized as the uncontrollable blazes continue to burn. More than 20,000 people have been forced to evacuate their homes. The chief of California's fire agency says the two most destructive fires are 0% contained. In total, more than 115,000 acres have been burned. Drone footage of Santa Rosa, California shows entire blocks of homes reduced to ash. Last year, the U.S. Forest Service warned an unprecedented five-year drought has led to the deaths of more than 100 million trees in California, setting the stage for massive fires. Climate scientists believe human-driven global warming played a major role in the drought. We'll have more on the California wildfires after headlines. In Puerto Rico, officials are warning the island's health system is in dire condition as the island still has severely limited electricity and running water nearly 3 weeks after Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico as a Category 4 storm. The New York Times reports one teacher named Harry Figueroa died after he went a week without the oxygen needed to help him breathe. He was only 58 years old. His corpse then went unrefrigerated for so long it was impossible to embalm his decomposed body. His daughter, Lissandra, said, quote, "Because of the electricity situation, a lot of people died, and you are still dying. You can't get sick now," she said. Other residents have contracted bacterial diseases, likely as a result of their exposure to contaminated floodwaters. The official death toll from Hurricane Maria has now risen to 43. On Tuesday, President Trump asked Congress for a $4.9 billion loan to help the island pay government salaries and other expenses. We'll have more on Puerto Rico later in the broadcast. In news from Washington, officials say President Trump has called for a nearly tenfold increase in the United States nuclear weapons arsenal. The unnamed officials told NBC News that Trump called for the massive nuclear arms buildup during a July 20th meeting with the highest-ranking military leaders. It was after this meeting that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson reportedly called Trump a moron. In response, Trump has now called for an IQ competition with Tillerson. In an interview with Forbes published Tuesday, Trump said about the alleged moron comment, quote, "If he did that, I guess we'll have to compare IQ tests," unquote. A shocking new investigation by The New Yorker magazine has revealed a slew of new rape and sexual assault allegations against disgraced and now fired movie producer Harvey Weinstein, who had been one of the most powerful men in Hollywood for decades. Weinstein has also been a major Democratic donor. The New Yorker reports three women say Harvey Weinstein raped them, while more say Weinstein masturbated in front of them or forcibly touched them without their consent. Among the accusers is former aspiring actress Lucia Evans, who says she had just finished her junior year at Middlebury College when she was invited to a daytime meeting with Weinstein at the Miramax office. She said he pushed her head down and, quote, forced me to perform oral sex on him. I said over and over, I don't want to do this. Stop. Don't. I tried to get away. He's a big guy. He overpowered me, unquote. Another woman, who was not named, says Weinstein forced himself on her during a meeting and raped her while she repeatedly said no. Like others in the article, she says she did not report the alleged rape and forced herself to continue to have professional contact with Weinstein because, quote, I was in a vulnerable position and I needed my job. It just increases the shame and the guilt, unquote. The article also reveals audio from a 2015 New York Police Department sting operation in which Weinstein confesses to groping Filipina-Italian model Ambra Batalana Gutierrez. The recording starts with Weinstein.
I'm telling you right now.
What do we have to do here?
Nothing. I'm going to take a shower. You sit there and have a drink. Water.
Don't drink. Can I stay on the bar?
No. You must come here now.
No.
Please.
No, I don't want to.
I'm not doing anything with you.
I know.
Now you're embarrassing me.
I'm sorry. I cannot. No, yesterday was kind of aggressive for me.
I
need to know a person to be touched.
I won't do a thing.
I don't want to
do a thing. If you embarrass me in this hotel,
I'm not embarrassing you. It's just that I don't feel comfortable.
I mean, don't have a fight with me in the hall.
Not nice.
Please, I'm not going to do anything. I swear, my children, please come in. I want everything. I'm a famous guy.
I'm feeling very uncomfortable right now.
Please come in now, and 1 minute. And if you want to leave, when the guy comes with my jacket,
why yesterday you touched my wrist?
Please, I'm sorry. Just come on. I'm used to that.
Come on. You're used to that?
Yes, come in.
No, but I'm not used to that.
The New Yorker article also reports 16 current or former employees of Weinstein's companies say they personally knew about Weinstein's assaults or harassment. Meanwhile, a slew of Hollywood's most high-profile actresses have told The New York Times they, too, experienced Weinstein's harassment, among them Ashley Judd, Gwyneth Paltrow, Angelina Jolie, Rose McGowan, and Pulp Fiction star Rosanna Arquette. Paltrow said, quote, we're at a point in time when women need to send a clear message that this is over. This way of treating women ends now, unquote. Weinstein's wife, Georgina Chapman, a well-known fashion designer, says she's ending their 10-year marriage. On Tuesday, former President Barack Obama and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton both condemned Weinstein, who's been a major Democratic donor. In a statement, Obama said he and Michelle have been disgusted by the reports and said, quote, any man who demeans and degrades women in such fashion needs to be condemned and held accountable regardless of wealth or status. Opposition to the U.S.-backed Saudi-led war in Yemen is growing in Washington, where lawmakers have introduced a congressional resolution to withdraw U.S. support for the ongoing bombing campaign. In an op-ed for The New York Times published Tuesday, California Congressman Ro Khanna, North Carolina Congressman Walter Jones, and Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan write they introduced the resolution, quote, in order to help put an end to the suffering of a country approaching a famine of biblical proportions. We believe that the American people, if presented with the facts of this conflict, will oppose the use of their tax dollars to bomb and starve civilians, unquote. The ongoing U.S.-backed Saudi-led bombing campaign has killed more than 10,000 civilians, sparked a cholera epidemic by destroying Yemen's health, water and sanitation systems, and has exacerbated a famine that's left 7 million on the brink of starvation. In Spain, Catalonia's leader, Carles Puigdemont, said Tuesday Catalonia has won the right to independence, but appeared to stop short of declaring the region's secession and instead called for negotiations with Spain.
The government and myself, we propose Parliament suspends the effects of the Declaration of Independence to undertake talks in the coming weeks, without which it is impossible to reach an agreed solution. We strongly believe that the moment requires not only to allay the tensions, but above all to make a clear compromise to advance the demands made by the Catalonian people, taking into account the result of October 1st.
Later in the day, however, Puigdemont and lawmakers did sign a Declaration of Independence. Today, Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy said he would move the government to invoke Article 155, which has never been used in Spain's modern democratic history. It would allow Spain to suspend Catalonia's lawmakers and seize administrative control of the region. And back in the United States, in Philadelphia, Mexican immigrant Javier Flores is slated to leave the Arch Street United Methodist Church, where he's taken refuge to avoid deportation for nearly a year. Javier Flores has been living in Philadelphia for 20 years as the father of three U.S.-born children. He took sanctuary only days after Donald Trump was elected president. Javier Flores has won an immigration hearing, which will shield him from the threat of deportation for now. He's slated to walk out of the church today. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Juan Gonzalez. Welcome to all of our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. We begin today in California, where powerful winds and bone-dry conditions are fueling massive wildfires. A state of emergency has been declared in northern areas of the state as the fires have left at least 17 people dead, destroying whole neighborhoods and forcing 20,000 people to evacuate their homes. State fire officials say they're battling at least 17 major fires in nine counties, which have burned more than 115,000 acres in just the past 12 hours. The chief of California's fire agency says the two most destructive fires are 0% contained. One of the worst blazes was in the city of Santa Rosa in northern California's Sonoma County, where fire ripped through a trailer park, destroyed homes, restaurants and hotels, and forced medical teams at a local hospital to evacuate patients as flames approached. On Tuesday, Vice President Mike Pence declared the state a disaster area.
Cal Fire is inspiring the nation. And we stand with them with great admiration and appreciation. Just a few moments ago, I informed Governor Brown that President Trump has approved a major disaster declaration for the state of California to assist in the response to wildfires that are impacting across the state.
The wildfires come after the U.S. Forest Service warned last year an unprecedented five-year drought led to the deaths of more than 100 million trees in California, setting the stage for massive fires. Climate scientists believe human-caused global warming played a major role in the drought. For more, we're joined by Park Williams, who is a bioclimatologist at Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory. He's the co-author of a 2016 report showing global warming is responsible for nearly half the forest area burned in the western United States over the past three decades. Welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. So explain what is happening right now in California. The devastation is just incredible.
Yeah, it is. So these fires that are getting the attention right now in California are very different from the big forest fires that have been getting our attention for the last several years. These fires are burning through towns, and the fires are really being driven by a big high-pressure system that is sitting over the coasts of the U.S. and driving winds from the east to the west, bringing very dry, warm air from the deserts of Nevada and Arizona out to the coast. And by the time the air gets to the coast, it's compressed down to sea level. It's very warm and very dry. It pulls the moisture out of vegetation, makes it ready to burn.
And you said before the show began that part of the problem may have been the rains that came earlier this year?
Yeah. So these fires out on the coast are very different from forest fires in that out near the coast of California, there's not a whole lot to burn oftentimes. We actually didn't hear a ton about fires occurring near the coast of California during the big drought, simply because it was so dry, there wasn't much growing, so not much to burn. This year, though, follows a record-breaking wet or near-record-breaking wet winter in California. And anybody who was in California in the spring knows it looked like the English countryside with green, lush grass growing everywhere. Well, that's the stuff that's burning right now. Grass is a very effective carrier of fast-moving fire, and all you need to do is dry the grass out, add a flame, and add very strong winds, and that's what's going on now.
So you have said in this 2016 report that looks at the link between climate change and forest fires that since 1980, how much of the fires can be attributable to climate change?
So when we concentrate on forests, we find there's a very strong link between drought and the amount of area that burns in a given year. And one really important part of the drought link is temperature. And we can actually mathematically determine the relationship between drought and fire, and therefore temperature and fire. And we know from climate modeling that the western U.S. has increased in temperature by 2 to 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit over the last century because of human-caused climate change trends. And from that value, we can back out the amount of area that is burned due to human-caused climate change. And we find that about half of the area of forests in the western U.S. that have burned over the last 35 years is attributable to that warming trend. And that half is really big. It equals the size of Massachusetts and Connecticut combined.
And what about the issue of urban sprawl, of continued expansion of towns into areas, forest areas as well? That's been also raised as a factor that makes the spread of these fires even more catastrophic.
Absolutely. So the first thing you need in order to have a fire is, of course, a spark that turns into a flame and carries through into a large fire. And in the western U.S., and especially in California, people are the providers of those sparks. At this time of year, lightning is not occurring in coastal California. It's sparks created by people, either because people are lighting fires actively or because human infrastructure is causing fires, such as down power lines. And so when I say that global warming has increased the amount of fire, that is really promoted by the huge amount of sparks, the amount of ignitions that people are providing to the landscape. If it weren't for people setting the fires, then we wouldn't see fires responding to global warming as we have.
Why is there such a disconnect between you, the scientific community, and the meteorologists on television? I mean, who are they? Because now there is a second question being asked. I mean, they'll flash severe weather, extreme weather on their TV screens across the lower part of the TV screen as they talk. But they do not flash the words global warming. But the second step now is they're asked, like an anchor will say, why is this? But they will not use these words. They'll say warm weather here, colder weather, rain, fog, whatever. But they will not make this leap.
Yeah, it's a really interesting phenomenon. I think it's because the term global warming and the term climate change have been politicized. But in the circles that I work with real climatologists who are working on these issues every day, there's no hesitation to use those terms. As you put greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, the globe warms, whether it's the Earth or another planet. It's just a law of physics. And so it is surprising to see trained meteorologists on TV steer away from those terms. Not all of them do. I've seen some good, refreshing, and educated discussion as well.
I wanted to ask you in terms of you said that we should be getting accustomed to even more and more virulent fires in the future. Could you talk about that as well?
Yeah. So since the early 1980s, when we go back to talking about forests, since the early 1980s, we've seen the amount of area of forest that burns in a given year increase by 600 to 800%. And so these days, every year, we hear people who are fighting fires saying that they've been fighting fires for their whole career, say the last 30 years, and they're seeing fire activity different than anything they've seen during their whole careers. Now, based on what we know about global warming and the link between warming and fire, and the amount of that fire has already increased in the last 30 years, it's I'd say, an easy extrapolation to say in a warmer world 30 years from now, fires will once again be unrecognizable to people who are fighting fires today. They will continue growing and therefore continue to become far more difficult to fight.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Park Williams, a climate scientist at Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, the co-author of a 2016 report showing global warming is responsible for nearly half the forest area burned in the western United States over the last three decades. And we will link to that at democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, the Reverend Jesse Jackson joins us before he heads off with a plane load of aid to Puerto Rico. We'll talk with him about what's happening on the island. We'll go from Puerto Rico to the football games and to what Vice President Pence did in going to Indianapolis and then leaving a game protesting the black athletes who took the knee, who protested racism during the national anthem. This is Democracy Now! Back in a minute.
Excuse me, but can I be you for a while? My dog won't bite if you sit real still. I got the Antichrist in the kitchen yelling at me again. Yeah, I can hear. Been saved again by the garbage truck. I got something to say, you know, but nothing comes. Yes, I know what you think of me. You never shut up. Yeah, I can hear that. But what if I'm a mermaid in these jeans of his with her name still on it? But I don't care, 'cause sometimes I said sometimes I hear my voice and it's been really deep thoughts. What's so amazing about really deep thoughts? Boy, you best pray that I bleed real soon. How's that thought for you? My screen got lost in a paper cup. Do you think there's a heaven where some screams have gone? I got 25 bucks and a cracker. Do you think it's enough?
Silent All These Years by Tori Amos here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Well, we turn now to Puerto Rico, 3 weeks after it was devastated by Hurricane Maria. On Tuesday, President Trump asked Congress for a $4.9 billion loan to help the island pay government salaries and other expenses. This comes as he allowed a 10-day waiver of the Jones Act to lapse, restricting shipments of food, fuel and medicine from foreign-flagged ships, as nearly half of the island still lacks clean water and nearly 90% lacks electricity. The expiration of the Jones Act waiver came over the fierce opposition of San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz, who blasted the Trump administration's slow response to the hurricane, tweeting on Sunday, "Power collapses in San Juan Hospital, with four patients now being transferred out, have requested support from FEMA, nothing." Federal Emergency Management Agency Chief Brock Long on Monday dismissed Mayor Cruz's comments, telling reporters, quote, "We don't have time for the political noise." Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rosselló said Friday that 63 of the island's 69 hospitals are operational. But reporters with the Center for Investigative Journalism say they visited several hospitals and found they had limited capacity or were even closed. On Tuesday, the official death toll from Hurricane Maria rose to 43.
This comes as military security firms continue to patrol the streets of Puerto Rico's capital, San Juan. Academy, formerly known as Blackwater, has a pending bid to provide security services for water transportation. Meanwhile, solar companies and nonprofits say they could help Puerto Rico regain power. Tesla CEO Elon Musk tweeted last week his company could help rebuild Puerto Rico's electric grid. Governor Rosselló tweeted back that the island could be Tesla's flagship project. For more, we're joined by Reverend Jesse Jackson, civil rights leader, founder and president of the Rainbow Push Coalition. He ran for president in 1984 and 1988 as a Democrat. More recently, he helped to gather aid to send to Puerto Rico, and this Saturday, he will be headed there. He's written a column published around the country this week headlined, "How to Put Puerto Rico Back on Its Feet." We welcome you back to Democracy
Good
Now,
morning.
Reverend.
Good to see you again.
It's good to have you with us. First, I wanted to ask Juan, though, about the latest on the Jones Act and President Trump's $4.9 billion loan request.
Well, Amy, the $4.9 billion really doesn't even begin to scratch the surface. And it is a loan request. In other words, Puerto Rico has to pay it back. Because the thing is that the U.S. Imposed Control Board which has a majority of Republican members, sent a letter to Congress last week and to President Trump on Friday, specifically saying, and I want to quote from this letter, because remember, this is now the U.S. Impose Control Board, where in this letter it said, Hurricane Maria and Irma have fundamentally changed Puerto Rico's reality. The control board goes on to say that that the island has not only a $74 billion debt and $53 billion of unfunded pension liabilities, that its economy has contracted by 15% in the last decade and lost, and the population has shrunk by 10%. But it says that it continues to have severe liquidity challenges and persistent budget deficits. So even before the hurricane hit, the government was bankrupt, had no money. And it goes on to say that on top of the damage that Puerto Rico has suffered, it's catastrophic and island-wide from this hurricane, and that Moody's has estimated that the hurricane did $95 billion in damages, 1.5 years of the total gross domestic product of the island. So this is a catastrophe on top of an existing total bankruptcy. And it says, and that the board goes on to say this has never happened. And so it calls for all matching funds from the federal government for any kind of disaster relief to be waived, and it calls for massive help for the government. I want to put in context, after Hurricane Katrina, the federal government allocated $85 billion to the Gulf Coast for recovery. After Superstorm Sandy, the federal government allocated $50 billion to New York and New Jersey for recovery efforts. And we're now talking about a $4.9 billion loan to Puerto Rico. That's amazing.
Mm. You know, Puerto Ricans and Virgin Islanders are American citizens. They're not foreigners as they're projected to be. It's a structural dislocation. It's time now for massive debt relief and renegotiation, for investment, low-income. You know, the Marshall Plan is not, it was so much money that was given or lend to them. It was 50-year loans at 2% government secured. It's a combination of debt forgiveness and investment with long-term lunch loans. And the 300 American corporations have used Puerto Rico as a tax haven. They, too, must step up to the plate.
And what are you hoping to do with this aid package that you are putting together and taking on there on Saturday?
We're to keep Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands on the front page, number one. We're taking, I talked with the governor. He said we need medicine, and we need water, and we need generators. Now, one thing that they can do, they must have massive evacuation. Those persons who cannot get medical care can, we would call hospitals in this country, who receive the sick. We have massive airlifts of Puerto Ricans to the mainland. They're already Americans. Second, the children can massively airlifted to schools in the U.S. Congressman Gutierrez went there, and he brought back four students from Puerto Rico.
The Chicago congressman.
Indeed. So the fact that you could have massive airlifts for the sick, because if they project a year without proper power, generation power, many will die in hospitals or trying to get into hospitals.
Well, Reverend Jackson, you probably recall after Hurricane Katrina, there were thousands of refugees from New Orleans who were basically taken in by other states and cities.
There were citizens called refugees. They were not refugees. They were citizens. And they were able to go first to higher ground in Baton Rouge and Houston, Chicago, New York. FEMA had evacuation money to evacuate them from a tough situation. FEMA can evacuate many people. Now, there are those who are against BACA on the one hand, we're trying to run quote-unquote non-whites out of the country, may find it offensive to bring more Puerto Ricans in. But Puerto Ricans are Americans, I mean, and so are citizens, and so are Virgin Islanders. And so we need something. It's good to take some medicine, some food, but given the structural dislocation, they're going to need some different kind of help, massive and quick.
And Juan, this whole issue of the Jones Act, that there was a waiver for 10 days, and people, their eyes might glaze over to hear, what is the Jones Act? But the idea that Caribbean countries could get aid from other countries, like, for example, Cuba, had sent 750 doctors and health professionals around to the hurricane-ravaged places. But They couldn't come to Puerto Rico because of the Jones Act. Aid couldn't come in from other countries.
Right.
Explain what it is and what it means.
Or from Mexico, from any of these other countries. The Jones Act means that anything coming into Puerto Rico has to be on an American ship. And so if Mexico wants to send aid or supplies, it would have to first go into Florida to be put onto an American ship to then taken to Puerto Rico. It's just driving up the cost of transporting anything.
Even President Trump said this involves our shipping companies and them making money.
Yes. Well, and of course, the shipping companies, together with the maritime unions who are trying to protect jobs, are in an alliance to prevent a waiver, a long-term waiver of the Jones Act, which all of the Puerto Rican leadership is calling for at this point.
Tremendous humanitarian crisis. And the crisis gives us the opportunity to address it in a meaningful way. If we have a massive debt, the banks and our government can work out a debt forgiveness program and invest in the 300 American corporations, 300 of them that are there, must pay the past gap taxes. Again, they've used Puerto Rico as a kind of tax haven. And I think that while we are fiddling with this, people are literally dying today, having slept in the dog last night.
There may even be a drug shortage in the United States because so many pharmaceutical companies are based in Puerto Rico.
Right. Although many of them have left, there's still quite a few. And you know, companies, as you mentioned, Johnson & Johnson is a perfect example of a company that has made much, much money from its factories, its drug factories in Puerto Rico. And Pfizer and these others all had
within 6 days there. After Katrina, through FEMA, we'd evacuated people around the country. And we can evacuate people from Puerto Rico to the mainland. And I'm convinced that while we're trying to figure out whether we're going to use solar energy or whatever, people should be evacuated. Also, be very clear on the fact that these citizens are in peril, and it brings the issue of reverse science to the front. So long as we allow these carcinogens to open up the ozone layer and these glaciers are melting and the waters are rising in temperature, land temperatures are rising, and the wind blows, hurricanes and tornadoes are coming. There's no infrastructure on the ground to protect us from this. The islands are in jeopardy imminently right now, not eventually, not in the future. They're jeopardized. After the hurricane season has just begun, really, you know.
So the Elon Musk proposing, let's make this a solar experiment, which sounded very interesting. But the concern also, and you talked a lot about this one, about the power grid, about this very lucrative power company and the push to privatize it. What about all of this? How would this play out?
Right. Well, obviously, the Puerto Rico Electric Company is a government-owned electric company, the largest public utility in the United States. And the power industry has long wanted to privatize it. And they're trying to use this crisis to accelerate that. But that's why the issue of solar power is so important. And many solar industries are now are offering supplies now and to begin to jumpstart the possibility of whole towns or neighborhoods beginning to develop solar power and break off from this electrical grid.
They use the crisis in New Orleans to privatize schools and jails. So some will exploit this for their own economic, ideological, and profit reasons.
And yet this comes as the EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt said Monday, the federal tax credits for the wind and solar power industries should be eliminated.
Yeah, well, it's typical of where we are today in America.
Well, we want to turn to a second subject with you, Reverend Jackson. And this is the issue of the controversy of politics and sports.
Right. We want to turn to the continued controversy. On Sunday, Vice President Mike Pence flew to Indianapolis, where he staged a walkout of an NFL game between the San Francisco 49ers and the Indianapolis Colts after players on both teams held a protest against racial injustice during the national anthem. Pence tweeted, quote, I left today's Colts games because POTUS and I will not dignify any event that disrespects our soldiers, our flag, or our national anthem. At a time when so many Americans are inspiring our nation with their courage, resolve, and resilience, now more than ever, we should rally around our flag and everything that unites us. While everyone is entitled to their own opinions, I don't think it's too much to ask NFL players to respect the flag and our national anthem. Well, more than 20 members of the San Francisco 49ers knelt during the anthem, while Colts players stood with locked arms wearing shirts reading, We will stand for equality, justice, unity, respect, dialogue, opportunity.
afterward, several reports surfaced that Vice President Pence's decision to leave may have been pre-planned. NBC reporter Von Hilliard, traveling with the vice president's pool, tweeted, "The media pool was kept in the vans ahead of the game instead of being let in with V. POTUS. As media pool has been made aware, a staffer told pool that V. POTUS, that's Vice President of the United States, may depart the game early, did not indicate how early. Donald Trump took credit for Pence's action, tweeting, "I ask VP Pence to leave stadium if any players kneel, disrespecting our country. I'm proud of him and Second Lady Karen." On Monday, Trump's presidential fundraising committee used the walkout in an email telling supporters, quote, "Immediately after the vice president's honorable display of leadership and patriotism, the fake news media relentlessly attacked him," unquote. Well, meanwhile, the selfie that Pence tweeted of him and his wife, saying he was looking forward to cheering Peyton Manning and the Colts, was the same picture that was used in a tweet by then Indiana Governor Pence in November of 2014, when he tweeted, "Cheering on our Colts with First Lady N as they kick off the second half. Go Colts, beat Jaguars." Well, San Francisco 49ers safety Eric Reed, who joined quarterback Colin Kaepernick's national anthem protest last year, referenced that photo on Sunday.
"With the information I have, him tweeting a three-year-old photo, until he can prove that he's been an avid Colts fan and he comes to NFL games on a regular basis, this is a PR play. My mother served in the armed forces. Three of my uncles served in the armed forces. In fact, my mom would have went to the Persian Gulf War had she not been pregnant with me. I have the utmost respect for the military, the anthem, and the flag. So I would say that every time y'all interview me. This is about systemic oppression that has been rampant in this country for decades, on top of decades. And I will continue to say and encourage people to educate themselves of how we got to where we are today, because it didn't happen overnight. And it's not going to happen overnight to fix these issues."
Vice President Pence's brief visit to Indianapolis cost the public an estimated